playlist.
Hi, and welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about TV, movies, documentaries, the upcoming race war, and so much more. I'm your host, Nick Bassine. I'm the editor of SBS's TV Guide, and I'm joined in the studio by my co-host and movies editor, Fiona Williams.
Hello.
Hello.
We're back.
We are, episode two. We're from SBS On Demand, we should mention, which is a superior free service that offers catch-up, exclusive stuff. And did we mention it's free?
We say that from the top because we've had a bit of feedback that we haven't mentioned that it's free. So we're probably overcompensating.
It's free, haters. Get on it. Fiona, it's been a little while since we've kicked it in Studio 9. What have you been doing?
Well, like a lot of the world, I've been watching the events of the US election, dealing with the fallout of that. But we've got a great show coming up, so I've been lucky to immerse myself in a great amount of movies and TV shows and keeping myself distracted by going to my happy place.
Great.
What about you?
I built myself a bunker, and I've been watching a lot of TV and movies also in my bunker, where hopefully my family and I will be safe.
Thank you for coming out of the bunker for this brief time.
Oh, listen, I wouldn't miss it for the world. We do have an amazing show. We're covering US adaptations of UK TV and Australian TV and some big movies that are out.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of great movies at the cinemas at the moment from directors who are what I want to call SBS-y. So we're going to talk about some of those directors like Park Chan-wook and Andrea Arnold, who all have movies in the cinema and coincidentally have movies available at SBS On Demand.
We're also going to be talking to Matthew Evans. He's going to be calling in, and we're going to talk to him about his series, For the Love of Meat, which is available on SBS On Demand, as well as What's the Catch?
Yeah, and he's very big in the food ethics movement, so looking at how our food ends up on our plates and encouraging everyone to be a bit more aware of how it got there.
Absolutely. But first, we're going to start with US adaptations of UK TV shows. British shows and their US adaptations. Are they any good? Why do they do them? What's going on? Where am I?
What are some good examples? What are some bad examples? What are some ones we don't care for?
That's right. So Criminal Justice is a 2008 UK show starring Ben Whishaw. Or is it Wishu?
No, it's not Wishu. He's Mr. Everywhere at the moment. He's Q in the Bond films and he's in The Hollow Crown, which we'll get to a little bit later.
He's the voice of Paddington.
Oh.
Interestingly, the Paddington Bear was not in Criminal Justice.
Would have been an entirely different show.
That show was remade by HBO into The Night Of.
Yes.
Which was a great show about a young Pakistani-American Muslim guy who is perhaps falsely accused.
Maybe.
But he's arrested for the murder of a woman and he is churned through the justice system.
Mm. Covered in incriminating evidence.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes, it definitely seems like he did it.
Yes. So Criminal Justice came first, the British version, which is available at SBS On Demand. So they both have this same premise. Ben Whishaw obviously is not a Pakistani American. That's one major difference in the adaptation.
As far as we know.
And yes, they both share a grizzled detective who obviously thinks he's done it from the outset. So he wants to do everything he can to get a conviction. And there's an underdog lawyer who is part idealist, part opportunist. And he basically wants to get the best story that will get his guy off the hook.
Right. Mm. I saw The Night Of first.
Okay.
And so as when you see something the first time, you might have more of an allegiance to it.
Mm.
I liked Criminal Justice, but I liked The Night Of a lot more. I thought Criminal Justice was more staid and sober, but The Night Of took more time. There were many more episodes, but it was much more intense and suspenseful.
Yeah, sure. Well, I saw Criminal Justice first. And yeah, that has more of a procedural kind of flow to it, I think. The Night Of, as the adaptation, they've taken that premise and applied it more to the situation. As we say, they've changed him into a Pakistani-American. It's played by Riz Ahmed, who's also a bit of a Mr. Everywhere at the moment. Going to be in the new Star Wars movie.
Also British.
Yes, exactly.
Not American.
Yeah.
Does a very good American accent.
Yeah, and you might know him from Nightcrawler, which came out a couple of years ago. It was great. So yes, the US adaptation transplants it all to New York, making him a Muslim. That brings with it some assumptions of guilt from the outset. You know, you sort of see how that's a different way to play his way through the justice system.
What works is that they, or HBO takes the original, the source material, and turns it into something very different in its own. And that's where adaptations work well, because it's really hard to adapt something and make it new and have it work, because there's so many things that get lost in translation.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you can see the appeal of doing an adaptation. It's sort of like, if something worked, it's kind of like doing a test screening without having to make anything. Like, you sort of see the elements of something that has potential, but then the trick is, how do you make this work somewhere else? Especially now that we can see both versions. I mean, back in the day when there was network television and not the internet, you might have seen something, not even known it was an adaptation. I'm sure a lot of the things we saw were. But now we can see both. It has to be good when we also can see the original source material.
One of the adaptations that is often referenced when people have this conversation is The Office.
Yeah.
The UK Office is, I mean, for me, an absolute classic.
Yeah.
I've watched it many, many times. I think it's probably one of my three favorite shows of all time. It's so funny and dark and uncomfortable. And the American version has to stretch out the concept to 22 episodes a year. Yeah. I think it went for 6 or 7
Yeah, and the
years.
Original was only one series, wasn't it?
It was 2 series and a telemovie. And so, yeah, fundamentally, you can create something much tighter and much better that way. But having a sitcom every week for 22 weeks, it turns it into something else that worked, still worked for a lot of people. It was very popular, but it's, I was uncomfortable with how, it was still funny, but it was, there's too much hugging, too much, we're all friends and family.
It
and
worked out.
And yeah, everything works out. And yeah, I just didn't like that.
Same. Yeah. I mean, I didn't like the idea of it when I first heard they were remaking it. You know, the usual.
People were furious.
Oh, what's the point? But, you know, it took me a couple of episodes to really get a sense of, okay, no, they are trying something a bit different with this. Whereas David Brent was so awkward and had that nastiness to him. And it was a different kind of desperation that they created Michael Scott, the American version played by Steve Carell. He was a lot more likable. He was more annoying than
despicable.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah. He had more of a childish bent to him, which was more his fatal flaw than the unlikability of David Brent.
And what is so great about David Brent is that even at the end of the series with the movie,
The Christmas special. Yeah, I mean, there was
Christmas
a movie
special.
This year as well.
So the Christmas special is, he's redeemed in the Christmas special. You like him, but it's still organic, even though he's been such a monster the whole time.
Mm.
They still get to his humanity without making him soft. And that's what I like about the UK version. House of Cards, turns out that was a UK show.
Yeah, very different. Like, if you're talking about adaptations, this one is more an inspired by than a straight lift. You know, it is about a political animal in the UK.
They both have them, the main characters, look at the camera.
Yes.
In showbiz, that's called breaking the fourth wall. What do you think about that?
Very impressive.
Just threw that around.
Thank you. Yeah, which is innately UK. And of course, the different political systems play a role in it as well. But yeah, I mean, I love the American Kevin Spacey show.
It's
come to it late.
Fun.
Yeah. I binged them all in over a couple of weekends earlier this year. So yeah, I love it. But I haven't watched the UK one. I've a little bit of it.
Well, I've watched I'm all caught up on the American one. I think the last couple of seasons, it started to get kind of shaky.
Mm.
And I'm not sure where they go from all the horrible stuff he's already done. So I watched the British version out of curiosity, and what was really interesting is how I fell asleep on the fast forward button and just plowed through it, because good Lord, is that dry.
Mm.
I mean, there is some fun stuff happens at the end, but then by then I was already lost.
You tapped out. Well, fair enough. Yeah. I mean, this is what we're talking about. It's, you know, taking that idea and just knowing what will work for your audience. So, you know, Kevin Spacey brings that. He is that character of Frank Underwood. So it's knowing how to adapt it well for the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works.
Obviously, Britain isn't the only place that the US takes.
It's not where all the ideas come from.
TV shows from.
Yeah.
Australia has also had shows that have been adapted. I don't know if you remember a little show called Kath and Kim.
I don't remember the American version of it. I don't think many people would.
It starred Molly Shannon and
Selma Blair.
Yes. That's right.
Yeah, that was one that didn't translate.
I watched the original on the plane when I was moving here 9 years ago. And I was watching it. I was looking around at people hoping they would be able to let me know why this show was entertaining in any way. because I couldn't figure it out. Obviously, there's some cultural stuff going on that I don't recognize.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the skit from the original comedy series it was from, and then a couple of series, I think. But it went well past its expiry date. But the characters themselves, I mean, you know, they honed those characters over the course of many years and tapped into a certain type of Australianness and an accent and made it exaggerated fun. In the adaptation, I think that just got lost and it died a very quick death, I think.
My favorite Australian show of all time is Wilfred. Okay. And that was adapted, I would say, very successfully. I don't like it as much as the original.
Sure.
But they did a good job of keeping the main feeling of the original. And Jason Gann was involved, so that certainly helps. And it got even darker, which was a really interesting way to go. But I didn't find it as funny.
Sure.
I think the original is very funny.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Which did you see first?
I saw the original.
Okay.
And then I watched the HBO version. I think Elijah Wood's great.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really good casting, actually.
And it looked really good, and it's kind of haunting. So it's definitely worth watching. But the original had, it's just more funny somehow. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just the weirdness.
Yeah, it's a lot, it was weirder in a funny way rather than, and more, it's more absurd.
Yeah.
And the American one was a lot more dark and scary. Criminal Justice is available on SBS On Demand, both series. So you should go check it out. Once again, that's sbs.com.au/on demand.
We're talking movies.
It's a good time to go to the movies at the moment. We're past the glut of disappointing superhero movies that are part of the US summer blockbuster season, and we're not quite at the Christmas Day, Boxing Day releases yet. So it's sort of that sweet spot where some of the independent and some of the world movies get more of a look in than they might otherwise at other peak times of the year.
Are we in Oscar season
yet? We're getting to Oscar season. Yeah, I think some of the films that are coming out at the moment are potential nominees. And I bring it up because at the moment there are some releases from directors whose work you would have seen on SBS. I'm talking about Park Chan-wook, Andrea Arnold. There's a new one from Denis Villeneuve, Tom Ford, Paul Verhoeven. All of these directors I'm citing off, we've had all of their past films on SBS. And a couple of them, we do have some of their past films at SBS On Demand at the moment. So guess which ones we're going to be talking about.
Hopefully those. Did we mention that SBS On Demand is free?
Oh, jeez. So we're going to talk about the new releases from these directors. So to start with, Park Chan-wook has a new film out called The Handmaiden.
Mm.
So he's obviously South Korea's highest profile director, who's back with another one of his sumptuous gothic thrillers, The Handmaiden. It premiered in Cannes earlier this year. And Park Chan-wook, he's a director who's renowned for his visual style as much as his language. He declares his Hitchcock influences.
I have a cultural question.
Yes.
In the credits, the name is reversed. It says Chan-wook Park.
Yeah.
I want to call him whatever he wants to be called. Does he have any nicknames?
Well, in Q&As, his cast tend to call him Director Park.
Oh, Director Park. That sounds so menacing and intimidating. I like it. What did you think of The Handmaiden? Did you like it?
I love it.
That's pretty good.
Love it. So The Handmaiden, it's a gothic love story, revenge thriller. This won't give any sense of how amazing it is, but it's about a con man and a pickpocket who team up to cheat a reclusive heiress out of her fortune. Their plan involves the handmaiden, Suki, being hired to earn the woman's trust and to eventually convince the woman to marry her partner in crime, who poses as a dashing count and promises to whisk her away from the lecherous uncle that keeps her locked up virtually in his grand country estate. The plan is that after the wedding, he'll have his new wife declared insane, marched off to the loony bin, and upon that time, he and the handmaiden will divvy up her money, which sounds easy enough, but things hit a snag when the two women become very close and Suki realises she might actually be falling for her mark.
That's how I met my wife.
I love this film.
Yeah, it was great. It's beautiful. It's unbelievably absorbing to watch.
It's really funny as well. It's sexy and violent and just really cheeky. I really like the fresh sense of humor to it.
My favorite part is when he's on the floor without his pants and he's clearly in some sort of danger. And he says to the people who are about to do things to him, "Would you mind getting me my pants?" It's pretty funny.
And this is also an adaptation. This was an adaptation of an English book, Finkersmith, which is set in the 19th century, but it's been transplanted really carefully into sort of the 30s Korea, when Korea was a colony of Japan. So that plays a key role in the film, I think. The idea of what is Korean anymore really plays a part, even with the dual subtitles, sort of which language they speak is quite crucial to the story as well. Helpfully, they're colour-coded. And with this, I mean, it's all atmosphere and production design and, you know, you really feel the brocade fabric and the, she's got five drawers of fancy gloves, and it gives us such a sense of place, the design, as much as what goes on screen as well.
There was a lot of scissoring.
Yeah, it's an R-rated movie, yeah.
I'd never seen that much in a film like that. It's just quite sexy.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely.
What I liked about it is you never know what their motivations are, what they're doing. Are they doing that because they really like that person, or are they trying to screw that person over, which plays into all the con man stuff?
Totally, yeah. And I should mention it's in three parts, the film. And so you do see things happen from one person's perspective and then the flip side, and then the third part brings it all home. Yeah,
yeah, almost Kurosawa-ish.
A little bit, yeah.
What do you think about that? Sure. I've seen some of his
films.
Very
impressive, yeah. Nice.
I call him Director Kurosawa.
I think he'd appreciate that. So I love it. It is easily a favourite of the year. And so if you're interested in seeing more of Park Chan-wook's movies, we've got Old Boy, which is probably his best known film, out on demand, which I was pretty happy to rewatch. So this one is his 2003 film, probably the one he's best known for, not his first film, but the one that really made him a name, I think, internationally. He won the Grand Prix prize in Cannes in 2003, and apparently the jury president, Quentin Tarantino, wanted him to win the Palme d'Or. But
you can see why Tarantino would like Old Boy. It's all a lot of that kind of genre borrowing from other directors and putting together the big freak show.
Yeah, yeah. Tarantino was outvoted. It went to Michael Moore for Fahrenheit 9/11. But this is probably the one where Park Chan-wook got his reputation for on-screen extremism. And, you know, that continues through to The Handmaiden. But, yeah, for this film, a guy's abducted for no apparent reason. He's just taken from the street one night and shows up in a shabby hotel room. Doesn't know how he got there, doesn't know the circumstances of that, but he's there 15 years. And his only knowledge of the outside world is a television set that keeps him abreast of what's going on out there. And through that, he learns that he's been framed for the murder of his wife. And he's got a lot of time on his hands, so he starts building a list of everyone he's wronged, trying to work out who might be behind this and who's setting him up. And it's quite a long list. He's not the nicest guy in the world, so when he finally does get out, he's out as unceremoniously as he was put in there. He's just out one day, 15 years later, and obviously he's primed for vengeance, and he tries to zero in on who it was that was playing such a long game in trying to torment him.
Like Handmaiden, it's funny and uncomfortable and horrible and haunting. It doesn't have the colors don't pop as much, and it's not as production design-y, I guess.
Sure. Except for the hair. I mean, the lead character's hair is amazing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
that's a real cue to his mental state. It's sort of a...
Yeah, right.
It's a bit Edward Scissorhands-y, I guess, by the end of it. It's the sign of a man who's been driven mad by being cooped up for 15 years for who the hell knows why. You know, he thrives on vengeance.
Vengeance is a big deal with Director Park.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of the psychology behind people who want vengeance. It's what can drive a person to such extremes, I think, is where how he really operates.
And he's got vengeance in the title of a couple of his movies.
Yeah. Sympathy for Lady Vengeance and Mr. Vengeance.
Have you seen those?
Yes. Old Boy was the second in that trilogy.
Oh, it's a revenge trilogy.
Mm.
Jesus.
But it plays, it's in The Handmaiden as well. There's a bit of that.
It's a lesbian revenge fantasy. Mm.
Okay, well... Why don't you have a look? So that's Old Boy playing at SBS On Demand.
Once again, that's sbs.com.au/on-demand, which is free.
So another of the directors we're looking at today is Andrea Arnold, who is back in cinemas with American Honey. So this one is her first film in America. So it's a sort of a languid road trip movie about a woman called Star, and she's sort of a restless teenager, late teens, who has been lumped with looking after someone else's kids. And she makes an impulse decision to jump into a minibus full of itinerant workers, and she hits the road selling magazine subscriptions and partying hard.
I really related to it because I have a lot of family members named Star.
Okay.
This is a very common name in my family.
Well, you might relate to American Honey. It's getting a lot of love, a lot of award season buzz that maybe she'll get a look in this year in the Oscars. I didn't love it. I really do like her filmmaking and some of her past films. It's more of a mood than a movie, which I respond to the mood, but I think it sort of over-eggs the metaphors a bit and it just outstayed its welcome for me. It was sort of, it's one of those films I felt you could sort of stop anywhere. I got annoyed by it towards the end, which, you know, I've done straw polls of people I know and respect who speak really highly of it. They loved it, but yeah, I wasn't feeling this one. So that's one of the cinemas. That's not one of the ones that are my pick for the year, in case you couldn't tell. But I do love her filmmaking, and Fish Tank is one that stands out to me as probably my favourite, definitely my favourite of hers. And that is one we have it on demand, coincidentally. What I like about her is that she writes young women well. It's sort of late adolescence coming into womanhood. You know, they're starting to get a sense of themselves. That's just that time that she just likes to explore. She does that with Fish Tank. That's the same with American Honey and Wuthering Heights, even sort of a period film, but about that similar sort of time. And I think that works best in Fish Tank, which, just a basic synopsis, it's about a teenager living on a council estate in the UK with her mum, and the mum parties hard and sort of leaves the kids to raise themselves, kind of. Her mum brings home a new boyfriend, and he takes an interest in her life and sort of is the first person who's done that. And there's an attraction that plays out, and he encourages her to pursue her dreams to dance. But she ends up competing with the mum for his affection. And this one stars Michael Fassbender in one of his early roles.
Does it ever. Whew. He is easy on the eyes.
I really like this film, and I really like him in it. It's got a great sense of place, and she's a really good character. And again, she doesn't work with experienced actors. She sort of likes to cast people who are similar to the characters.
Michael Fassbender, clearly just from the beginning, he is the most charismatic person I've ever seen in the movies. I mean, his smile, I'm not a 15-year-old girl, but I almost fell in love with him.
Mm, and that works.
So you can watch Fish Tank on demand, sbs.com.au/on demand. And they also have Wuthering Heights, which is also a film by Andrea Arnold. You know, for lunch, I had fish, and I don't know where it came from. I don't know if it had parents or if it was made in the lab. Mm. Or what if it had been meat, similarly, I would not have known where it came from, and I would have scarfed it down with a Director Park type vengeance. But the man that we're about to talk to,
yes,
he knows.
He makes it his business to ensure that we should be caring more about where our food comes from.
That's right. So with us today is Matthew Evans, who's a former chef and food critic turned Tasmanian pig farmer. He's got his own. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk to him today. We're going to get into some meaty topics. Oh. We're going to talk to him about eating meat sustainably.
Because he's just done a series about that.
For the Love of Meat was on SBS. It's currently available on SBS On Demand. What's the Catch is also available on SBS On Demand, a series about seafood. And we're talking to Matthew right now. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Nick. How you going?
I'm well. How are you?
Grouse.
So, Matthew, what inspired you to tackle this project?
I've been very interested in where my food comes from a long time. And so we grow pretty much everything that we eat these days. But knowing how hard it can be and the economies of scale, I wondered how it was done on a commercial scale. Well, everything we do is really low tech and high energy input in terms of human physical energy and very inefficient. We're very old fashioned in the way that we do things. And I wanted to see what modern farming practices look like and how meat got on our plates. Because I think as a meat eater, it's sort of incumbent upon us to appreciate how the animals are reared in our name.
While you were touring these farms, what were some of the most confronting things you saw?
Mostly the smell, to be really honest. Look, when you have a lot of animals in a very small space, and people who work there sort of get used to the smell, but as an outsider, you come in and suddenly go, oh my God, what would be a sort of a minor agricultural smell, perhaps on an extensive farm on an intensive farm, it just becomes really concentrated and really catches in your nose and catches in the back of your throat to make your eyes water.
Wow.
How did doing this research and the show, how did that affect your own meat eating habits?
Well, the first and foremost, it sort of made me much more conscious of where my meat comes from and I guess the impact. So, you know, I might know that I'm rearing my animals in a way that I'm happy with, but then there's an impact beyond my farm, and that might be greenhouse gases or whatever it is. So it made me just cut down my meat eating and say, well, can I make my meat eating better? So can I eat just as good food? You know, I wondered if I could do it by eating less meat. And I mean, that's the challenge, especially people from my background, who are sort of Anglo background, where we not necessarily great on a frying pan, except cooking meat. So I've had to sort of relearn skills, had to look around the world at the different cultures and see what they do to improve the way I utilize the animal.
What did you settle on? I mean, what's your best strategy for eating meat better?
The simplest thing for me is stock, which has now been rebranded as bone broth. But I'm a big fan of using the bone. So when you have a 500 kilogram steer, a male cow, you only get 270, 80 kilos of carcass, and then you only get 180 kilos of actual meat. So there's something like 90 kilos of just bone, and all of this amazing flavor is trapped within the bone. And a lot of cultures know that when you cook food on the bone, you get a lot more flavor. Or if you cook, say, ossobuco, the shanks of an animal, and you get all that flavor, extra flavor, because of the bone. But sometimes you just cook the bone. So you can have a roast chicken, just take the bones that you would normally throw away, bung them in a pot with an onion, boil them for 4 hours, and suddenly you've got two or three meat-free meals that still taste of meat. Without an extra animal dying, which is better for the environment and better for animal welfare and probably better for your health.
I guess that's the thing as well. I mean, with the production processes of cheap meat is so prevalent now, a lot of us might have guilt about buying some of that cheap meat, but want to know exactly how we should be eating better. Not everyone can afford the best cut of something or go organic, but I guess it's about making the changes in the way you can.
When we were making the series, the director Steve Oliver and I had worked on another show called What's the Catch, which is a seafood documentary. And, we were very aware that, we'd sort of bored people at barbecues about their seafood choices. And here we were about to bore them about their, poking the sausages, going, where are they from? You can just imagine a whole bunch of people saying, oh, do you know what the name of the cow was before it hit the barbecue hot plate? And we didn't want that to be like that. We don't want people to actually feel guilty. So what we want to do is say, look, do you know how the animals are raised for your plate? It probably doesn't look like you maybe imagined animal husbandry, looks like in a modern sense compared to what most people have in their heads, which is Old MacDonald's farm is what most people see in their heads. Mm. So I guess the aim was to not make people feel guilty about those choices, the everyday choices when you don't have enough money or you don't have enough time, whatever. But where you can feel good, and what it's about is feeling better about yourself, is when you have the opportunity to make a better choice. So when you see, a chicken that maybe is RSPCA approved and one that isn't, if you choose the RSPCA approved, you've probably made the world slightly better for the next round of chickens, because they're going to grow more of those ones. So it's not about the choices when you don't have the money, the time, or the opportunity. It's when you do have a choice, when you maybe have met the farmer, or you think you're making a better choice for the environment or for animal welfare, and you make that better choice. That's the decision that you should feel proud of, and that's the decision that will help to change and improve the world.
You've already alleviated so much of my guilt with that. I mean, when I was watching the series, I was falling in love with every animal that was on screen. I mean, those pigs are unbelievably cute. But then a few hours later, I ate bacon. And I was I was thinking about the intense pull of meat and what it says about how we value our own happiness over an animal's. That's what we're saying. That's what people say we're saying. And how it feels wrong, but I'm just pulled towards it.
Yeah, look, I think there's something quite primal in us that we find meat attractive from a gastronomic sense. And You know, I think that it's okay to like eating meat. You know, there are some people who may watch the show and be across these issues who may choose to become vegetarian. But the show is not made to turn people vegetarian. And it's not trying to shock people. It's more about giving people the information to say, look, you can eat meat. And if you eat meat, there are certain consequences for the health of yourself and for the health of the environment and possibly for the health of the animal. And you may choose to eat meat differently. But as meat eaters, we actually should be part of that conversation, not the people who choose not to eat meat and not the people who rear animals and want to do it, you know, in secrecy behind closed doors. But as meat eaters, animals are reared on our behalf. I can tell you there's no chicken farmer in Australia who has 60,000 birds in one shed for their own consumption. They only do it because other people eat meat. Right. And other people are interested in how those animals are reared. And this show is, I guess, you know, a tiny peek behind the closed doors of the industry that doesn't want you to see what they do in your name. And I think, you know, as meat eaters, it's kind of our responsibility to say, you know, tell us what you're doing. And as grown-ups, we can make decisions about what meat we eat and what we're comfortable as society or as individuals.
Have you ever tried lab meat?
No, I think it's about $16,000 a kilo or something, or some ridiculous price. Yeah, you mean the meat that's grown in a petri dish or a test tube or something?
Yeah, I saw some pictures. It looked fantastic.
Yeah, look, I've never had the opportunity, and we did consider whether we, you know, it was something to look at, but we felt that it was so far in the future. And I think, you know, maybe for many uses, it's certainly going to have a place society.
Put me on the list.
You want your lab bacon?
Absolutely. All the most dire reports about meat eating say that there's no way we can sustain this, and that in 50 years we're all going to have to be vegetarian because we're going to run out of space and animals, and we just can't afford to eat this way.
Yeah, look, I mean, the most dire forecasts are like that, but the more realistic ones are that we just eat too much meat. I imagine it'll be per head a lot less than Australians currently eat, but it doesn't mean that there'll be no meat eating. For part of the world that you can't grow grain, you can't grow vegetables, that you may be able to graze some goats, using those animals for meat or for dairy may actually produce more food than trying to turn the world vegan.
So on the podcast, we have a segment called What Have You Been Watching? And we always ask our guests what they have been watching, TV-wise or on demand or anything that you've been into recently, something you've liked.
Oh, look, I'm always a fan of Luke Newen and some of the stuff that he does and the places he goes, which is just so far removed from southern Tasmania that it takes me away from there and it takes me away from feedlots. But it does keep me in touch with food, which is a big part of my life. And I guess it's all about pleasure. I mean, I think that television can really help take you in different directions in your life, but then, you know, at its heart, sometimes you just want entertainment. And
where do you go for that kind of straightforward escapist entertainment?
You know what? I've discovered this show called Portlandia.
Yeah, sure.
Which is probably really old and been out forever, but you know, I've only just recently discovered it, and I've been immersing myself in that because it's this alternate reality, I guess, this strange American town that probably sort of doesn't quite exist, but it's making fun of, I guess, people not dissimilar to some of my friends and me, and yet in this quirky American way. And I'm really, really quite addicted to
it's a great show.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, very funny. All right, well, thanks
so much.
Pleasure. Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you. All the best.
That was Matthew Evans, the host of For the Love of Meat and What's the Catch, available on SBS On Demand. You can also find him at his website. That's www.fatpig.farm. So Matthew Evans has been watching Portlandia and some Luke Nguyen. So what about you, Fiona? What have you been watching?
Well, I've started on the new Netflix series, The Crown, looking at the evolution of the Windsor family from Peter Morgan, who seems to be the go-to guy to do stories of the monarchy. He's done The Queen. He did The Other Boleyn Girl, Last King of Scotland. I think he did another play last year about Queen Elizabeth. He's getting a lot of mileage out of her.
Loves the Queen.
Yeah. Have you been watching that one?
I have. I've seen the first series. Right. I think it's very nice and watchable, but I don't understand what the big deal is.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't finished it. I'm a few episodes in. You know, it's got that stamp of quality around it.
It's very expensive.
Very expensive. All the prestige behind it. You can see the money being spent. It's event television, if we use such phrases anymore. You know, it's okay. It's
Very okay. Everyone in it is pretty good. John Lithgow is really good.
He's great, as Winston Churchill.
Yeah, he's fantastic. But I just found them desperately trying to mine tension and drama from nothing, from who the queen is going to choose as her personal secretary. And I could not have cared less over and over again. And then the music comes in and I'm going to choose someone else as my personal secretary. No thanks.
I saw that. I think New Yorker was noted that there's a lot of drama about drawing a pot of tea. You know, a lot hinges on minor moments, which, I get. It's very languid.
So my favorite thing about these old British shows are I like a really old, blustery British accent. Like that kind of thing. It cracks me up to no end. So Lithgow doing Churchill was like that. It was fantastic.
Yeah, that's all you praise.
Madam.
Yep, great. And Jared Harris was...
Oh, he's great.
Very good. Yeah, really as good. George the Sixth.
I want to say George the...
The King's Speech King. Elizabeth's dad. So he lasts an hour, episode and a half. And then, of course, the crown is passed on to Elizabeth. And that's where...
Yeah. Played by Claire Foy, who plays Anne Boleyn in Wolf Hall, which is, I think, a superior royalty show. But mainly because, I mean, it covers a period of time where things actually happen. Things that matter. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the period where the monarchy stops mattering. Nobody cares anymore. Or people are starting to care a lot less.
And of course, she's still on the throne. So they're talking about six series of this.
God,
potentially,
I cannot...
each one looking at a decade. So
yeah, cool. With somebody who...
Well, she's the stable factor between across all of these decades. And that's the challenge, I guess, of hinging your whole show on someone who, by the nature of their job, is necessarily bland. Like she's not supposed to have a political opinion on anything. She's not really supposed to be... agitating for anything. She's the stabilizing force. So
I was much more interested in whatever Churchill was doing.
Yeah, he's great. And that's going to be interesting when he's not there.
Your Majesty.
So as we do, we try and find a link back to On Demand with some of the things we're talking about. So we, on air, have just screened The Hollow Crown. So, I mean, you know, if we're talking about The Crown being too slow-paced and languid and not exactly getting your blood boiling, maybe some Shakespearean kind of monarchy is more your thing, where, you know, you want some beheading and you want some...
Yeah, a little blood.
Yeah, a lot of blood.
And along with The Hollow Crown, there's also New Year's Day. We're going to have some documentary series about royalty and Queen Victoria's children and the Queen's mother-in-law. Various other, sundry other royals. Again, that's SBS On Demand. And now we come to the part of the show where we ask you to ask us anything. Ask us any kind of personal problems you're having. We especially want to know about your personal problems. The first one comes from the SBS switchboard. An older viewer has called in to ask, quite innocently, if Inspector Rex was going to return anytime soon. We informed her that it wasn't returning, and she replied in a softly spoken voice, "Oh, that's no good. My husband used to get naked on all fours and bark like a dog when Rex was coming on. What? We used to love it." Yeah.
Did you make that up?
I did not. This was an actual woman that called in. Now, maybe it's a prank caller putting on an old woman voice.
Yeah.
Oh, you're assuming it's a woman. It could have been a man.
Putting on an old woman voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, look. Yeah. Either way, I think someone was putting on a voice and having a lend of our switch. I'm sure they're not the first or probably the last. But yeah.
But you might be insulting a whole population of people who actually do this to that
true.
Show.
True. I mean, I'm not casting aspersions on people who do. I'm just saying, would you then call up the TV station to say you did?
They'd be the first people I call.
All right. Well, I've got another one, a variation on the theme, I'm sorry to say. This is a Name That Movie. Several years ago, I saw a late night film on SBS. My recollection is that it was an erotic film set somewhere in Scandinavia. It featured a girl in a remote, icebound house whose partner goes off to work in outback Australia. Dialogue in the film was minimal and the film was subtitled. The film had beautiful cinematography and showed the stark contrast between the cold Scandinavian climate to that of hot outback Australia.
So cold versus hot.
Yeah. Glad you're keeping up. Where was I? I seem to remember the film portrayed the yearning of the young Scandinavian girl.
I love where this is going.
Yeah. Who was obviously missing her partner while he was working in Australia. The movie started in a very erotic fashion with the woman alone in her house, seeking self-pleasure using shards of ice broken from the eaves of her house.
Oh my God.
Could you help me identify the movie? And if so, where I can view the movie? That's not something you'd forget, but no one here knows what that is. Do you? So anyway, thanks for your feedback. We don't know the film, I'm sorry. And no, I didn't make that up.
Like these brave viewers, if you have any questions for us, please get in touch with SBS Movies on Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email at film@sbs.com.au. We'll be waiting.
Anything. Ask us anything.
Anything, literally.
Anything
you want, literally. That's it for now. We'll put some notes about the show online with recommended links to the programs and movies we've been talking about. I'm Nick Basine.
I'm Fiona Williams.
Thanks for listening.
See you next time.
Hi, and welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about TV, movies, documentaries, proper hand-washing technique, and so much more. Hi, and welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about TV, movies, documentaries, the upcoming race war, and so much more. Post-apocalyptic war zones, and so much more. The apocalypse, and so much more. I'm your host, Nick Basine.